This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:05 in the evening, and as promised, we've got a new council, guys, albeit the title of it isn't quite as cool and kind of Lord of the Ringsy as the Council of Elders. Instead, this council is aiming to tackle economic problems, and it is called the Economic Action Council.
So their main objectives are to look at and make decisions on issues related to human resource, poverty, cost of living and home ownership, and to stimulate economic growth and improve equal distribution of wealth.
So it's interesting, right, to look at those objectives, because they are all the kinds of things that we've been talking about on air and that we're hearing about as well, simply because they are concerns that a lot of us share, right? Regardless of where we fall in our, you know, B40, M40, T20 kind of scale, these are the things that are concerning us, you know, the growth of the country, affordable housing, you know, just how to tackle the whole issue of cost of living. So it's interesting to me that there is a council that is kind of built around the specific complaints, not interesting, good, that they're addressing specific complaints that have been emerging over the last year or so.
If anything, it looks like this is how it would distinguish itself from the Council of Eminent Persons, because that was broader, and that was to look at, I guess, paying off the debts and looking at all the loopholes and the corruption that has occurred. But this one seems to really, if anything, serve the people more than anything else.
I'm assuming, though, that we are going to actually be hearing about what it is that they do, about the decisions that they make. The Council of Eminent Persons, as you mentioned, they had a rather big purview, basically, solve our problems, go. And so it's understandable then, I suppose, that we've not really heard what it is that their recommendations are. I think there's still an embargo of sorts. But with this council, I think I'm not alone in saying that I would hope to actually see decisions, to see policy, to see suggestions being made pretty quickly. Now, the council is made up of 16 people. So it's 5 ministers and then 11 other prominent individuals. It's being headed, of course, by Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad. And then the ministers are Datuk Sri Azmin Ali, Lim Guan Eng, Datuk Darrell Lai King and Baru Bian.
Some of the prominent individuals include the Prime Minister's Economic Advisor, Muhammad Abdul Khalid, Tan Sri Rafida Aziz, former members of the CEP, Tan Sri Zeti Akhtar Aziz, Professor Jomo Kwame Sundaram, Federation of Malaysian Consumers Association CEO Dato' Paul Selvaraj, Bursa Malaysia Chairman Dato' Shireen and Zahara Muhyiddin, and Lawyer Bah Tony. And it's quite a diverse group.
Yeah, and it sounds like they're going to be attempting to tackle this issue of economic growth from a few different angles, judging by the people on the panel. So academics have welcomed the move. They believe that the council will be addressing issues concerning the well-being of Malaysians. Professor Dr. Shazali Abu Mansor of University of Malaysia Sarawak basically said that this council seems to be more representative compared to the Council of Eminent Persons, and that the possibility for the council to go wrong or perhaps to go awry seems to be minimized.
Yeah, and that, I think that could only actually be determined if, say, the report is, as you said earlier, is made public. And so far, the CEP's report has just been kept under wraps.
Yes. With this, like I said, I'm assuming that there is going to be more immediacy to it. I think at least because these are bread and butter issues, because these are decisions that could potentially change basically my wallet, my spending power, you know, how I live, I would like to see pretty soon, as early as possible, what exactly they're going to be suggesting, what exactly is going to happen. Let us know what you think. I mean, what would you like to see the new Economic Action Council address? What are the specific issues? Again, they're looking at human resources, poverty, cost of living, home ownership, and stimulating economic growth, improving equal distribution of wealth. What are the things specific to your lived experience right now that you would like to see addressed? Call us and let us know, 7733 2900. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be speaking after this with Professor Dr. Raja Rasia, who is a Distinguished Professor of International Development at the Asia-Europe Institute in the University of Malaya. So stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
It's the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. We are talking about the Economic Action Council. We're trying to kind of get a handle on what it is that they're going to be addressing. Just in short, their main objectives are apparently to look at and make decisions on human resources, poverty, cost of living, home ownership, economic growth, and equal distribution of wealth. So that's kind of a big mandate, really. And now we have on the line Professor Dr. Raja Rasia, who's a Distinguished Professor of International Development at the Asia-Europe Institute in the University of Malaya. Raja, thanks for joining us. So how much power or authority would a body like this have?
Sometimes we have had a very strong influence. If you look at the past councils we've had, I think the one that they set up in 1997 to address the Asian financial crisis, I think that council was around for a couple of years. I think it did a great job in addressing the volatile fluctuations that we faced with our ringgit and souring non-performing loans, bankruptcies and so on that came with the Asian financial crisis. Among the good things they did was to address the currency fluctuations through the introduction of capital controls, and at the same time address bankruptcies and so on. So much so that they actually had an incisive impact on these issues when the global financial crisis struck in 2007.
And how will it be different from previous efforts or councils like the CEP, for example?
To a large extent, they're not very different, except that the previous one had a mandate to be there for 100 days, I think. That's one. The second, whatever we got to know about what they did came out indirectly. For that matter, for example, they wanted the ECRL to be renegotiated. Some members talked about renegotiation. Some members, or at least one of them, who I've heard speaking in public forums, mentioning the need to discontinue them simply because they are not economic. Now, if you compare that sort of contribution to what they are expected to do now, I would expect much more transparency now, simply because there are more members there. That's one. Second, not all of them, to me, again, pardon me, I'm not familiar with some of the names that are there, so it may not actually reflect on their own credentials, but it may be more because of my own ignorance. I find there are a handful of them who are, to me, who have demonstrated high competence, and I believe they will probably contribute, but I'm not sure about the others there. So we probably would like to know, too, how these people will be contributing to addressing the issues that the Prime Minister put up as to why this council was created.
So, as we mentioned, they have quite a few objectives. What economic reforms do you think the council should focus on first?
I think that if you look at the issues that are put up there, they appear too general to me. To me, these are important points that need to be addressed. The immediate points are, one, the problem of debt service. How are we going to bring it down to manageable levels? The instruments that have been put up before, they have different objectives, like the Harapan Fund and so on. They may help build patriotism and so on, but they are not going to make any dent in reducing the debt problem. Second one is, this is not so much a problem of absolute poverty, because we cannot dismiss what the Stats Department has come up with, which has shown a trend decline in... Now, one of the problems we face, and this is a serious problem, there has been a downgrading of manufacturing. In that, what I mean here is we have hardly upgraded in value-added terms. The share of value-added and gross output of many industries have stagnated or have grown very slowly, so slow that there has been a widening gap with countries above us. Now, if you don't have that share growing in gross output, you can't really see an active rise in wages. Now, what is holding back this is, to me, what I would refer to as technological freeze. We don't really see serious upgrading, even though we have this Industry 4.0 master plan, but I don't really see a significant focus that suggests that they have a clear roadmap and they have a profound understanding of industry to see that those elements are actually will actually be promoted aggressively to see that they diffuse sufficiently well to see that that value-added share will actually grow to enable workers by and large to enjoy higher wages and so on. That to me is key. That's one thing that's important. And that would also require the focus on training. We can no longer think about skilling workers in vocational schools that would give them much more precision, because machines can do that now, and they can do that far better than humans, which means to say that you will experience structural change in terms of what kind of demand workers will have to subject them to towards. The last one I'd like to mention in the interest of time is environmental greening. Now, it has environmental greening has not only got bearings on resource allocation, but also a huge link with health. And the world is moving in that direction. The minister in Morphe is doing a great job, I think, you'll be in. But I'm not sure whether these are things that will be addressed by this council, because I didn't see it there. And all of them have a link. So to me, these are the four things that I'd like to mention at this point.
Will this clash with any ministry's portfolios, like ASMIN's, for example?
To a large extent, I think this is what the Prime Minister, who's going to chair it, will do, is to allow them to cross-move from one portfolio to another, simply because that's what their role will be in addressing specific problems the country is facing. So I don't see any such problems in that way.
Right. And there's some anxiety about whether this group can truly reflect and understand the economic woes of all groups of Malaysians. Are there concerns about the economic class makeup of the council?
I know some of them very well. Just because I don't know some of the others, it may not be fair on me to make that sort of comment. But I think I would rather answer it this way. I'd like to see that the four points that I addressed just now will be taken up by these members. And whether they can actually handle it, some of them can. If they put their heart and soul to it, I'm sure they can do it. But I think in all these things, they need to take account the political environment here, which obviously requires that distinction between horizontal and vertical inequalities. I don't think there is that distinct a problem now compared to 1970 between ethnic groups, even though many of them are flagging that, and that's why you need to have political parties by ethnic groups. But I think the more serious problem is regional inequality between East Malaysia, East Peninsula Malaysia, and West Peninsula Malaysia, between Sarawak and Sabah and Peninsula Malaysia. I think that could manifest in some sort of problems which Indonesia has faced. Indonesia has faced balkanization of late. Aceh has got devolution, which is largely run by itself in an autonomous way, and there's also serious attempts by Irian Jaya to break away. Now, although no region in Malaysia has come to that sort of a point, melting point, but I hope the fact that those regional imbalances are worsening will be addressed by this group.
On the other hand, the fact that this is quite, there's diverse representation when it comes to the members of this council, why is this significant in the issues that are going to be discussed?
I think they're important because I see them as the key point confronting the country. Apart from something that to a large extent becomes stale, but it needs addressing, which is corruption. But I think the four points that I mentioned, to a large extent, have not been dealt head-on. And to me, as an economist, I think much of the problems we carry now are consequences of not addressing them head-on. Now, the longer we wait, the longer we wait these questions, we don't tackle them, the slower will be our approach to become developed. On the one hand, and on the other hand, to see that we have a much more balanced society. It's good to hear the Prime Minister talking about wanting to have a Malaysia that's much more equal, because it's quite different from what he was saying in the 80s.
So there are suggestions of an Economic Action Council specifically for the B40. What are your thoughts on this?
Reading the lips of the Prime Minister, which suggests to me that he's now increasingly focusing on the B40. But to address problems of B40, you cannot forget the whole economy, because the economy is connected. When one deals with resource allocation, you're moving resources from one side to another. You want to see that the entire population are able to think. Surely the analytical and innovative capacity of the population as a whole will be superior to, say, just only 20% being able to do that. I'm making this point because if you don't address the problem of B40, you will have, say, about something like 40% of people working several jobs or not being able to even have time to think about what they can do innovatively. So a society becomes much more innovative, much more productive when you have resources distributed evenly, in a much more egalitarian way, rather than allowing it to markets to allocate those resources.
So there's also been some speculation that the formation of the council reflects perhaps disappointment in the current cabinet's reform efforts when it comes to the economy. What do you make of that?
A number of us are disappointed on many things because I'm sure the euphoria of change that many expected also suggests that for serious academics, they believe in a lot more developments than what we are seeing so far. But I believe change is not easy to come because idealism is very much the element that dominates minds. Now, when it comes to action, I'm not sure if not only it's a reflection of those people who have come into power, some of whom were there before, including our prime minister for a long time, but also because you need to coordinate these things. People have different ideas and so on. So I think my feeling is I would not seriously finger point, say, maybe over a year, giving them time to work towards improving the connectivity and coordination between themselves and the way they connect with the population in the country. I wouldn't really see too much into it, but I would like to see improvements at least monthly in what these guys are doing.
Raja, thank you for sharing your thoughts. That was Professor Dr. Raja Rasia, Distinguished Professor of International Development at the Asia-Europe Institute at the University of Malaya. And we've been asking you for your thoughts with the formation of this council. What are the kinds of reforms that you would like to see in terms of our economy? What areas would you like them to specifically focus on and address? And also, would those monthly updates be enough? We would like to hear from you. You can call us 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We have this message from James.
So with the formation of the Economic Council, what we would like to see is, or rather for what James would like to see is, to improve the country's economic situation, strengthen the ringgit's condition, to improve the cost of living and ability of home ownership, to limit home ownership to anyone to a max of 2 units. That's an interesting idea. And then this would reduce the game of buying property and flipping for quick bucks. And last but not least, quality of our education and health systems.
I think those are all good suggestions, particularly the idea of home ownership, because we are seeing this problem with the market when it comes to properties and when it comes to homes. So that would be one way of going about it. Sun says, in the light of ever-increasing, you know, loud calls by scientists, economists, activists around the world for urgent action on climate change and irreversible environmental damage in the next decade, it would be unwise to tackle the question of our country's growth without simultaneously trying to tackle the question of our role in saving this planet. I would like to see us take on something like the US Green New Deal, economic and social growth through not just green jobs, but green industries, green society, changing our energy infrastructure, closing the gaps in our waste management systems, increasing the sustainability of our agriculture, our use of resources. It is a huge challenge, but it's also a huge opportunity for any country bold enough to go for it, because it would boost not just our economic activity, but our collective health and well-being, and ensuring generations of Malaysians to come don't have to live with the consequences of our current unsustainable thirst for endless economic growth at any cost.
Those are some very fantastic ideas. And I think that with the idea that if we start creating jobs to match the green market and the green future that we want to aim for, and I guess it's also just, it's very doable, and it's surprising that we don't have an environmentalist on this board.
Yes, but will there be environmentalists in the conversations that they have, right? Because it's one thing to not be represented, I suppose, on the board itself, although you're right, it does look a little bit like an oversight. But at the same time, hopefully they will still engage in conversations with environmentalists. You know, it doesn't mean that just because you're not on the board that you don't have a voice, hopefully.
Yeah, and I hope that also just extends to other factors too. Like, you know, I think a lot of a conversation earlier with Raja Rasia was to talk about the involvement of people from the B40 community, and I hope they do engage them, because from a perspective in general, it seems that they haven't really done so so far. The government in general hasn't done so.
So keep those messages coming. We've got a few that we'll get to after the news. You can call us also, 7733 2900. We love speaking with you. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
This is the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin, and we are talking about the formation of the Economic Action Council. It's early days yet, but the hope is that they're going to be addressing and making decisions on things like cost of living, home ownership, equal distribution of wealth. We heard earlier from our guest, Professor Dr. Raja Rasia, and we've been asking you as well, what would you like to see the new council focus on? What specific areas in our economy are affecting you the most right now? 7733 2900 is the number to call. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Right now on the line, we have Samiral Arif. Samiral, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, good evening. I just want to add to what Prof said. Actually, if you see the economic output of Selangor and Wilayah Persekutuan, that's about 40% of the Malaysian economic output. And if you add Penang, it's close to half. Mm. So that, from there, you can see the picture of a disparity in economic development. And from there, you can see the states of the East Coast would take a long time to achieve the level of that of Selangor, Wilayah and Penang, and also East Malaysia. So that is the disparity in development. And for the development to be sustainable, you have to rebalance development. And one aspect related to that is connectivity. Some parts of the peninsula developed late, maybe due to geography and all that. But now, with Industry 4.0, you can rebalance development that way. Mm. And of course, the other thing is we need institutions. And institutions to help all this development take place. The main thing is you have to have economic development. Only when you have economic development can you have redistribution of wealth and so on and so forth. And the problem now is some parts are lagging behind. That's what I wanted to make. But fortunately, yes.
No, sorry. I just wanted to kind of address something you said, because I think that it is something that we often hear, right? Like, we need to address this issue of inequality. It will take a long time. We need to kind of work towards that. What, in your view, would be a reasonable goal to set and say, look, at this point, we need to achieve some measure of parity?
Well, according to the economic calculation, if I'm not mistaken, the states in the East Coast will need another 20 years to catch up with the developed states in West Malaysia, especially Selangor, Wilayah Persekutuan. Actually, Selangor, Wilayah Persekutuan and Penang are already developed. They're already developed. The rest of us that are not developed.
Fair enough. Thank you so much for calling and sharing your thoughts.
I just want to add one more thing.
Sure.
Fortunately, we are in South Malaysia, the region which is among the most dynamic growing. And that is, of course, China now contributes a lot, and India is catching up fast. And we are in South Asia. So that is a plus point for us. I think I'll just stop there. It relates to the connectivity part. Actually, I wrote something about this on The Edge. If you Google my name, you probably find it. This is 17, I think. Samir Arif, yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for calling. So to aid you in your Googling, in case you are doing it, that was Samiral Arif, who I believe is an analyst. That was one part of the issue of inequality. We have also received a number of other messages talking about what people are hoping the council is going to actually look at. KW says, abandon the third national car project. Raising car prices artificially is putting a great burden on the people. We're starting to see new car launches with higher prices already. Also, to control talents from other states from migrating to the Klang Valley, let them develop their home state, which I think speaks to Samiral's point.
Yeah, but the opportunities have to be there, and I hope that's what the council and I hope that's what the government is looking to. And because the reason why they will come to the Klang Valley, because that's where all the jobs are, that's where all the new startups are coming up from, more or less.
A very simple message from Chin: fix the education system.
And it's a very big task that Masli Malik has.
David says, I would like to see no more MSc status for crony developers in KL, more MSc in Ipoh, Kuantan, etc. So there seems to be a theme running through here about other states, kind of looking to developing Malaysia as a whole instead of, kind of continuing the long-term focus on just the Klang Valley. We've also received this message here from Lee saying, BFM, if you only allow two houses, and that's in terms of purchases, then the government should provide other investment options for non-boomies, investments like ASN, BSN and others. Thank you. Freddie says, on the subject of socioeconomic issues, provided the government aren't overly arrogant and create their own 2MDB, GE15 will be decided on socioeconomics, and I believe that this is where they're going to be focusing on. Perhaps DB 2.0 is needed, but instead of along racial lines, it should focus on class divides between the B40, M40 and T20. The focus should be food on the table, roof overheads and putting money in the pockets of the rakyat. And I think that speaks to a tweet that we received earlier from Boleba saying the Economic Council now. And yes, I mean, I think that the reason why it's now, and I realize I'm just speaking based on speculation, but I think that it might be coming from basically the fact that this is an increasingly loud cry. It is something that people are really focusing on, and it is something that the government also needs to look at. I agree with Freddie that I think a lot of GE15 is going to be decided on this matter.
Yeah, and I guess that was what the crux of GE14 was as well. People voted on bread and butter issues, and I guess it was compounded by the fact that political leaders seem to be living a life that was so lavish, and for someone who is so poor, you don't understand why these people are able to live in such largesse.
Teng says, why doesn't the government look at how to increase people's income instead of focusing on the cost of living alone? I don't think you're alone in wondering that. We've got this from Amma saying, we need a new education minister, but we're not talking about education. And also, I'm not 100% in agreement on that. We have this from Ling who says, why would anyone buy property if the property market is cool and lacks luster? Beware of the cooling of the property market, or we might end up like the UK where nobody wants to own a property.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if owning property is necessarily the next thing that we want to keep our focus on, because I think the next generation, or at least for my generation, we are okay with renting, or the idea is buy to rent, but and when you want to consider for your own house, you rent instead.
Keep those messages coming. You can call us 7733-2900. You can message us 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. Before we continue this conversation, just a quick look at some of the other messages that have come through. This from CT regarding the halting, or rather the postponement of former Prime Minister Najib Razak's case, saying, I had to search who issued the initial certificate of transfer. It was the same AG who subsequently withdrew it. I'm no lawyer, but this sounds like our dear AG shot himself in the right foot, then passed the gun over to Najib's lawyer to let them shoot at the left facepalm.
That's a very good analogy.
And then this from Muhammad Ali, saying that the problem in Malaysia is that marijuana is demonized for all the wrong reasons. Eye roll emoji. Sometimes I wonder if there's any hope for those really looking for it strictly for medicinal purposes. The way forward is to get educated. Watch Weed, the documentary by Dr. Sanjay Gupta, as a breakthrough in educating the public in the United States. So just a brief sampling of messages about other matters. We've now got a caller, I believe. We've got Victor on the line. Good evening, Victor. What are your thoughts? Nice to hear from you.
Yeah, good evening. Hello?
Hi, Victor.
Yeah, good evening. On the issue of this Economic Action Council and on the issue of this palm oil in particular,
right?
Somebody sent me a post the other day, our very own minister in the primary industry, which I shall not name.
Uh-huh.
And then she say, during the while she was having Chinese New Year Eve reunion dinner, she has to send a statement to EU and say that, EU, if you propose a boycott to ban our palm oil, we are going to ban your product as well, BMW, Mercedes, Airbus, and French wine and perfume and all that. Actually, I was thinking, to be very, to be kind, to call her an auntie is an insult to the term auntie, because why can't we argue on the merit about our very own palm oil, the quality, the properties of it? What harm does it do? We are not capable to argue our case.
I would like to think that she could. I think this might have been more to do with, I think this might have been more to do with just trying to appeal to people who enjoy sort of not catchy slogans, but easily digestible pieces of information. So it was probably tit for tat. I agree that it's not the best look, but I assume that that's where she was going with that, and not necessarily as a general statement or as a statement of intent, I hope.
Yeah, I think she has gone wrong, a lot of wrong. I mean, we don't elect, we don't change the government for that. I mean, the quality of the government, it seems go down the drain. I mean, it seems to get worse instead of getting better. I mean, at least when we have our Dr. Lim Keng Gek, everybody say he's a crazy doctor. When he was the minister of this relevant department, at least I think we can argue our case. What is wrong? I think we don't have enough scientists to present an objective case, I mean a scientific analysis on our palm oil. That are we poisoning ourselves while using palm oil? What is wrong with palm oil? At the moment, we are just saying that, oh, European has been very unfair to us. They have been trying to They have their ulterior motive, so they want to promote soya oil.
Right. Yeah. I understand. I do think that is probably a larger conversation that we have to have about palm oil. We've attempted it a couple of times, but every time we address it, I think there are so many different stakeholders, safe to say, so many different opinions. Hopefully we get to address that in full.
Yeah, I think the last time when we talked about it, you know, we came from the point of view of, well, for a lot of farmers, that's their only livelihood. And that's why we have to keep pushing. And that's what Theresa Kaur is trying to do, is to, you know, make sure that the livelihoods of these farmers are sustained.
Keep your thoughts coming. Let us know what you would like to see when it comes to the Economic Action Council. Again, what they're specifically looking at are issues of income inequality, housing, poverty, cost of living. You can call us 7733-2900. What would you like to see their focus on? WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Building fit Malaysians. BFM 89.9.
It's the evening edition with Lynn and Kelvin. We are taking a look at messages that have come through regarding the Economic Action Council that's just been formed. They've been tasked to look at and make decisions related to things like housing, the cost of living, really the stuff that matters, I think, to a lot of Malaysians. Call us. Let us know what you think. What would you like to see them focus on? 7733-2900 is that number. You can WhatsApp also 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Azami says, are they going to look into the immigrants policy, including immigrant workers and non-documented immigrants, because it affects not just the economy, but also the security of the country?
I assume it's something that they will look into, because I think for a long time and until today, they still hold the belief that immigrants are essentially stealing jobs, the 3D jobs away from local Malaysians. I think that's the current narrative that they hold, as opposed to the one where, well, these jobs are just so low paying that no one really wants to do them.
Nurhan, meanwhile, says the hope is to focus on tourism, healthcare, economics, and disaster preparedness programs. Now, the disaster preparedness point is interesting because I am not sure how prepared we are. Maybe we're so prepared that we don't need to talk about it. But
no, definitely not the case.
Yeah, because I don't think, I think what we have, speaking of, you know, narratives that we've been told, we've often been told that we are a country that is relatively free of the kinds of natural disasters that we see in our neighbours, in other parts of the world. But I think with climate change being what it is, and with the randomness of the earth, basically, we don't really know that for sure.
Yeah, the biggest issues for now are probably related to flooding
and
water issues. Also, it's something we face, especially in strangely dry periods.
Amir says, I want to see unity. Tell the council to focus heavily on unity, perhaps the school system first. I think the unity issue is because they're focused on the economy. I think it's likely going to be addressed in terms of inequality of wealth, you know, kind of equally distributing wealth and in a roundabout way, I suppose, fostering unity through there.
And if anything, that might be the focus of Wahida Murthy's own ministry as opposed to this one, because if this one, it seems specifically for economy issues.
Jason says, just copy Singapore, whether in education, transportation, housing. They've done the research. They are successful when you consider that the Singapore dollar was once at parity with the Malaysian ringgit, and then their purchasing power is much higher now.
Yeah, but Singapore is also a different case where they are much smaller and they've chosen, they had to immediately focus on something else because they were short on natural resources.
KW is back to say, is there any member actually from the B40 on the board, or else how much would a person with, you know, say 80k a month income understand about their problems, you know, the economic problems that are being faced by people on the street? And once again, I would very much hope that despite the fact that, yeah, you can't necessarily represent everybody,
yep,
that when you do have those conversations, when you do take into account where those policies and who those policies are going to affect, just because the people aren't on the board right now, it doesn't mean that their voices won't be heard. This is me being extremely hopeful. I don't know.
Yeah, and I'm hopeful also that they do have very sincere and very intense conversations with the B40 community and everyone else that's not really part of this. I hope they also do engage the likes of Parti Socialist Malaysia, because I'm sure they have very strong and very interesting ideas that they can bring forth to the table.
We're getting some thoughts on Victor's thoughts, actually, about about the minister, Theresa Kopp. Basically, Fujisan saying, hey, maybe, you know, you can help the minister handle the European market. I think we've also got a caller on the line. Let's see. No, we do not.
We do not have them yet. We will get to them very shortly.
I see. Let's have a look then at the messages that have come through. Inche Khalid saying, people will be more united if everyone is wealthy. And I think... maybe not, I don't know about wealthy, but I think people will be more united if the income disparity is less great.
Well, I see where Khalid is coming from, because if, say, the narrative for, I guess, for some of the traumas that happened during GE14 was that, well, some people just are taking away so much from you, and the idea that we don't have enough to go around, if everyone is on equal levels of wealth, I think that's no longer going to be a problem.
We've got George on the line. Good evening, George. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, hi. Good evening to everyone. I'm just commenting on a view by an earlier caller, Victor.
Yes.
And he has put the Minister of the Primary Industries in a very poor light. I agree with him that she shouldn't be countering the boycott by the European by saying we won't buy their products. I don't agree to her stand on that. But to say that she hasn't done enough to promote palm oil in a fundamental way is really, I don't think that's correct. I think it's so basic that any minister will try to promote the product, for example, palm oil, by highlighting the virtues of palm oil. So to say that she hasn't done it is such a simplistic view. That's not correct.
In all fairness, George, I think that the perhaps the discontent was stemming from the fact that it seemed to be more of a direct response to the EU saying, you know, look, if you ban us, we ban you. And I think that was probably more the issue. But I take the point.
Surely. So I just want to say, let's be fair to the ministries and the ministers, not just Theresa Kopp. They are trying their best. I think when people on the street try to speak for ministers and not understanding how complex these jobs are, I think we are just making it too simple.
Yeah, that's fair enough. George, thank you so much for calling.
Surely. Thank you.
I think that's a fair point.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've also got this from Vicky saying the government tax on property should focus on short-term speculators, not long-term house owners who wish to sell their over 30-year-old house. I think that once we kind of hone in on the housing market, there are going to be a lot of very specific concerns that people have.
Yeah, and perhaps if the government does focus their how they do the housing in this sense, then it might also inspire property developers to not build with the expectation that people flip the property.
This from Wyman saying, inflation and wages, which I think summarizes what Ting had to say earlier as well. And then this from another listener who WhatsApped saying, focus on developing talent in the country rather than bringing in expats. Companies and organizations are not committed to developing local talent.
Yeah, that's correct. And that's why there's been the serious mismatch between what we produce as graduates locally and what companies kind of want in terms of skills.
So it sounds as if there are a couple of levels here, right? I mean, there's the national level saying, like, look, we want you to develop local talent, meaning Malaysian talent. But then there's also the issue with states. Because I've always thought that if I were living in another state, if I were not somebody who grew up, born and bred in the Klang Valley, then I would not have held any of the jobs that I have held, should I have you know, chosen to stay in wherever it was I was born, say my father's hometown. If I'd been born in Ipoh, I don't think I would have been working in a radio station necessarily if I chose to stay.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think we're just extremely lucky to be born in the Klang Valley into a certain class, because that comes with certain accesses, certain privileges, certain connections that otherwise, if you were born out of KL, to a certain class that you wouldn't have.
I don't even think it's about that. For me, it's purely about the availability of industries. You know, it's very much to do with the fact that, you know, my first job was in advertising. Would I have had a job in an advertising agency in Ipoh, or would I, if I wanted to do that, have had to leave? So there are just these questions when we're talking about developing talent and developing industry, I think. Keep those comments coming. You can call 7733 2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.